From KPFK, Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday traditionally kicks off the annual holiday shopping season, and this year's calendar has a shorter time period between Thanksgiving and Christmas, leading retailers to squeeze in more business in fewer days. But as online shopping dominates the market these days, warehouse workers and delivery workers at Amazon.com, the world's largest retailers, are feeling the squeeze in dangerous ways. Amazon's warehouses have been the subject of various studies and revelations of dangerous conditions for workers. In Europe this past Friday, workers in various locations simply went on strike to protest working conditions at Amazon's warehouses. In the United States on Cyber Monday, protesters gathered outside Amazon founder Jeff Bezos's penthouse to denounce those same conditions. And a new study finds that Amazon has paid the lowest taxes of the big six tech companies. My guest is Shahryar Khosji, Executive Director of the Warehouse Worker Resource Center. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So there's so much to talk about because it seems as though Amazon's constantly in the news. But I know that you are a part of a group that put out a report called Too Big to Govern, Public Balance Sheet for the World's Largest Stores, put out by Economic Roundtable. Tell me why Amazon is too big to govern.
So Amazon is the behemoth company that has its hands in a lot of different parts of our economy. It's obviously a huge retailer, a huge player in online retail. Approximately half of online purchases are originated at Amazon.com. But Amazon is also a massive player in a lot of other sectors of our economy that people don't necessarily know about. They're the largest web services provider and server farm provider in the world, and have well over a third of that business, which leads to their having control over a lot of our data. Major companies like Netflix or Slack use Amazon as their provider of web services, as well as the federal government. Agencies like the CIA also use Amazon to provide web services to them and for their data services. They're also a major player in the way that our economy is developing and to the way they work with workers. They're a massive company that's now our second biggest private employer in the United States. And they do a lot of work surveilling their employees. They do a lot of surveillance and really making sure that they understand exactly what every single worker is doing at every point in the workforce. And they're using that information to figure out how best to automate our workforces. So they have a huge impact on both our current economy, but also where our economy is going. If we let the Amazon business model control where we're going, we're going to have a situation where our workplaces are more automated, where our workforce and our communities are more surveilled, and we have very little control over it.
Now, the warehouses are the part of Amazon that consumers almost never get to see, right? We see the website, we see the delivery person, and of course, the trademark boxes, and it makes life easy for people who don't have time to go out to the stores, brick and mortar stores to buy things. And it's the warehouses, however, which seem to be one of the most problematic aspects of this company. The report by Economic Roundtable said Amazon's warehouses have been welcomed by some communities as a source of jobs and economic growth, but there has not been an assessment of the costs of its presence. So what are the costs, as far as you can tell, of a community that houses an Amazon warehouse?
So this report by the Economic Roundtable focuses on Southern California. That's really what they're focusing on, the LA, Orange County, and our region, the Inland Empire, Riverside and San Bernardino counties. Our region, inland of LA, is one of the biggest warehousing clusters in the world. We have well over 400 major warehouses, 14 of which are operated by Amazon directly. Amazon is our biggest private employer in our community. Well over 20,000 people, sometimes in seasons like now, much higher, are working for Amazon in these warehouses, like you said. And what we've seen is that these jobs, which were promised when Amazon started opening warehouses in our region about 7 years ago, they haven't turned out to be what we'd hoped. The Economic Roundtable report says the median annual income in these facilities is around $20,000. And that's for workers who are working full time. Even those, there's still a huge number of these workers who are working part time, who are temporary or seasonal, and those workers are, not even making that much money. So the economic impact directly of the company on the employees is not what we want to see, in terms of the high cost of living that we have here in Southern California. But it also has an impact on our community. There's a, you know, the report notes that the majority of the workers in these facilities are getting some public benefits of some sort or another. Essentially, Amazon is outsourcing benefits and conditions to the government, to the taxpayer, rather than providing them directly. So we depend greatly on these workers who work really, really hard for us to provide these goods, to get us these goods really fast. It's because these workers work so hard in such dire conditions that these products can get to us in 24 or 48 hours, in seemingly invisible hand moving these goods to us. But in fact, it's hands of about a quarter million people here in the United States who are working really, really hard under, like I said, these conditions where they're surveilled directly. There's huge pressure on quotas of how fast they must move, which leads to huge amounts of injuries. Another report that came out last week from the Center for Investigative Reporting, they looked at 23 warehouses in the United States operated by Amazon and looked at the logs that they provide to OSHA, Amazon's own records that they provide in terms of injury logs.
Right, this
They
report
found
came
that.
out around the same time that your report came out by
Correct.
Reveal and the Atlantic.
Correct. And Reveal found that the injury rate in those facilities per 100 workers was over double what the national average is for the warehouse. So the average in the warehousing industry is about 4 serious injuries per 100 full-time workers. At Amazon, we saw 9.6 serious injuries per 100 full-time workers. So, what we're seeing is we think that that's really based in the fact that they have such high rates of production and that they move their workers so fast. Those kinds of things lead to people having to literally run on in the workplace from site to site, leads to delivery drivers, having to cut corners literally and physically, or blow through yellow lights that leads to injuries and accidents. All these things kind of, in order to move moves quickly, and in order to get these products to us, it has a huge impact on our communities. It has a huge impact on the workers who are inside of these facilities.
The investigative report focused on one worker named Candace Dixon, who basically said that she had to scan a new item every 11 seconds to hit her quota, and Amazon always knew when she didn't. I believe this is referring to the surveillance you were talking about earlier. Her scan rate, more than 300 items an hour, thousands of individual products a day, was being tracked constantly, the data flowing to managers in real time. And she knew that, like thousands of other workers there, if she didn't hit her target speed, she would be written up. And if she didn't improve, she eventually would be fired. She is struggling from very serious health injuries right now, with discs in her spine. She's been diagnosed with a brain back sprain and joint inflammation and chronic pain. Her doctor determined that her injuries were 100% due to her job. And of course, these jobs, as you said earlier, Sherry, don't pay enough. And so these workers, on top of this huge injury rate and the debilitating injuries to their lives, they have to get on public welfare. And of course, our healthcare system in this country is terrible. So they have these injuries and probably pretty bad healthcare.
That's right. And so what we've seen is that there's a few different things that happen. First, the workers don't know necessarily about the workers' comp system. So often we see workers who, don't necessarily access the workers' comp system that their income is paying into and that their employer should be paying into to get, free treatment, whether they have health insurance or not. But often in those situations, those workers actually end up having to cover their own costs. They're told, come back when you feel better, rather than necessarily knowing that they could have treatment. And what we see is that Amazon hires really young. They really target kind of 18 to 25-year-old workers. We see people coming out of these facilities after working for relatively short periods of time, 6 months, 12 months, with severe injuries that come that look like injuries from somebody who's worked in a facility for years, right? The kinds of chronic injuries that you would get after years and years of activity, you see from folks after a year or two who are very young, who are just at the beginning of their careers, and who saw Amazon as a place where they could have a career. It's a company with a big name. It's a company that, they say you can build your career and grow in this facility, in this company. But rather, what we're seeing is huge turnover in these workplaces. Huge numbers of workers who work really hard. They worked really hard in other warehouses that know how to do a hard job, but still for whatever reason aren't keeping up in these facilities. It's because these operations are essentially trying to find out exactly how hard can we make these people work, and we'll try to crank it up even harder. Essentially, there's this algorithm that they operate from that you were mentioning, the rates, the quotas that these workers have to move at, and essentially they're unattainable. And even if you do attain them, then the next day they might be a little bit higher. And essentially at that point, they're basically trying to see how hard can we stress these workers, how fast can we move these folks in order, again, to get these products moved quickly. But there is a human impact on that, of that.
Now, let's talk about how workers have been expressing themselves in addition to speaking out. There was a New York Post piece on Monday of an ex-worker talking about how these warehouses are basically run by robots and have their sweatshops, she said, that are cult-like. In addition to that, workers have been protesting. I mentioned the European protests, and across Europe on Black Friday, Amazon workers were striking. And here in the United States, there have been protests as well. I know that Walmart workers joined with your organization to protest as well, right? So can you tell me a little bit about how these protests have been cropping up?
Yeah, so what's been happening is that there have been different movements of workers in the, about 300 warehouses around the country that Amazon operates, in different regions of the country. So again, our work is in the southern, inland region of Southern California. We've worked, like you said, with Walmart workers over the years, and are increasingly see a lot more Amazon workers coming through our doors to get information about their rights, and to figure out what they can do if they're injured, those kinds of things. That's kind of what we do, but also trying to figure out what can we do to take collective action to improve these conditions. And that's what we're hearing from a lot of workers. But what we've seen is that there are workers in other parts of the country who are already doing it. So in Minnesota, there's a group of workers, mostly Somali workers, who over the last course of the last year or so, in a couple of warehouses, have taken action to stand up for extra breaks for prayer, for extra parking, for fundamental kinds of basic things that they can get to be able to do their jobs. And there's a group of workers who have been taking action in New York on Staten Island, in the biggest Amazon facility in New York City. So they've taken action in the last few weeks, in the last few months, in coordination with some unions and worker centers, to say we want better conditions, we want safer workplace. There was a report about that facility and how dangerous it is. So there's workers all over the country who are realizing that this is a big company that can afford to do better, but also have courage to stand up. These companies, this company has really kind of scary non-disclosure agreements and other kinds of things that they use to try to keep workers from speaking up. And now we're seeing more and more workers who are saying, I still think we have to do this to be able to take care of each other.
Now, what is the organized response to Amazon? How has your organization worked with other grassroots labor groups and workers groups to take Amazon on? Because, it's one thing to have one day strikes or one day actions and solidarity protests. But I imagine, given that you're tackling the world's biggest retailer, a very, very organized response is needed.
Absolutely. So what's been happening is, over the last year or so, there have been different groups who have been coming across Amazon in their communities, us in Southern California, other folks in New York who came together initially around the headquarters fight. workers, obviously, and community members in Seattle, which is ground zero for Amazon, and how they have impacts on people's lives there.
And Amazon, we've been covering how Amazon tried to impact Seattle City Council elections just over the past few weeks, and you know, actually failed to an extent.
Exactly. So they're really testing out where they can engage with communities all over the Washington, D.C. area, which is the other place where Northern Virginia, where Amazon's looking to add, you know, an additional headquarters site. So over the course of the last year or so, groups like ours, a lot of, you know, organizations that work with workers, but also organizations that are thinking about Amazon's impact on our democracy, think about Amazon's impact on racial justice, think about Amazon's impact on the way that, you know, local small businesses are affected, have all come together to put together something that we're calling Athena. Athena is a network, a coalition of organizations that are focused on what can we do to make Amazon a positive effect on our community? What can we do to change the company? And, you know, in all these different ways, again, not just through the workplace, but definitely including the workplace, but other community, you know, in terms of its climate impact, in terms of its impact on frontline environmental justice communities. When you really dig into it, there's so many different places where the company impacts us, their engagement with ICE and other, you know, federal, you know, government and local police agencies and the way that they surveil our communities. So our effort is really to bring together folks from every, you know, aspect of work, community, labor, including labor unions, to come together and say, we want to change this company. This is a company that should be leading us and leading our communities to better conditions rather than dragging conditions down. But we know that it's going to take a coordinated effort from all of the different parties to get there.
I mentioned there was also a study that just came out about Amazon's tax obligations, and that of all the six top tech firms in the country, and those include, you know, Google and Facebook, Amazon, well, all six are sort of aggressively avoiding taxes, paying taxes, and this is on a global scale, not just here in the US, but Amazon of the six is the worst offender. And of course, this is its founder and CEO, Jeff Bezos, is the world's richest person. So this report that I mentioned found that Amazon paid only $3.4 billion in tax on its income so far this decade around the world. And this is a company that has boasted hundreds of billions of dollars in profits. And it's saying that, of course, Amazon fought back, said that it paid a much higher rate. But Amazon works very hard to keep its profits and the way in which it calculates its profits quite secret, right? So this is also part of the story, because it's not paying into the governments whose infrastructure, tax-funded infrastructure, it's relying on.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon is essentially, and a lot of these other companies, but especially Amazon, is essentially harvesting kind of the fruits of the neoliberal policies of the last 30 or 40 years on all different levels, including, you know, on a global level. So we see that they're benefiting greatly from, you know, in our region, for instance, there's, you know, a lot of different cities where an Amazon warehouse could operate. They kind of play these different communities off of each other and say, well, we'll land here or we'll land there, depending on what you can offer us. That's what they did with the headquarters search as well. They put out a RFP and said, if you want to, you know, offer us basically subsidies to come to your community, we're listening. And that's even what they're doing on a global level. So essentially what we're seeing, like you said, they're starting to get engaged more overtly in local politics, starting with what happened in the Seattle City Council races. There's other places where, you know, they engage with the government more directly as well, like these federal government contracts. They have a huge percentage of the server business that that the federal government and other government agencies use. So their, you know, their integration into our government is a really disturbing and I think under discussed aspect of Amazon. And I think that's a big part of what they want to do. Their profitability comes from these contracts that they have with the government, from their ability to, you know, engage those kinds of, you know, operations. They actually lose money on their delivery and their retail sales. But the fact is that through, you know, engaging governments, through getting government contracts, and again, like you said, through reducing their tax burden as much as possible. That's where they're making their profit rather than actually selling things to people.
Really? Wow. So finally, the guilt that I'm sure a lot of my viewers and listeners, and I will admit myself, feel when we hear about these reports, because we do take advantage of the convenience that Amazon has to offer, that is often met by thoughts of, well, I need to cancel my Amazon Prime membership. I got to stop ordering so many things for Amazon. What do you suggest for people who are just horrified by the ways in which Amazon is taking advantage of our economies, of workers and injuring workers? What do you suggest for ordinary people to do, those particularly who are customers of Amazon, which sadly most of us are these days?
So I think there's a few things there. First, you know, Amazon and, you know, fundamentally the workers who work for Amazon do provide a service to busy working people, you know, single mothers, people who really can't get out to the store all the time, people in rural areas. There's a business model that could be sustainable there. So there's not necessarily a question of guilt. It's more kind of talking about what can we be doing to change the company. About half of the households in this country are Amazon Prime members. And so there's a huge number of us who have, you know, direct access to the company and can
half
say
half the households in the country are Amazon Prime members. Wow.
Exactly. And there's a huge amount of power in that, in communities and workers saying, and residents and consumers especially saying, this is what we think needs to happen. So there's no boycott that's been declared. What we think needs to happen is, you know, we're still at an early moment. There's a lot of local engagement, local fights that are happening in a lot of different communities. If you go to athenaforall.org, and you can put in your email and your zip code, you can find out what's going on locally and get connected, not just with our national network, but with what's happening in your community. And that's really kind of what's up right now, right? There's a lot of local fights that are really trying to figure out what, you know, what we have in common. And that's the opportunity for you is, you know, your consuming and your consumption patterns are not the most important thing about how you engage with Amazon. It's how you engage in civil society. It's how you engage with the company and the public. So right now, in my community in San Bernardino, as we speak, there's a community picket outside of the Amazon warehouse in the city of San Bernardino around what's going on. They're building a big air freight terminal in our community that we're demanding that there be community benefits, that there be, you know, some community standards for that facility. In that context, there's, you know, people from the, you know, just from the public who are showing up saying, this is what I think Amazon should be doing in order to benefit my community in the city or the region that has, you know, more Amazon warehouses than anywhere. So really thinking about how do we engage not as consumers, but as citizens and as people who can, you know, have an impact. That's really where we think your energy can be best spent. And again, if you go to athenaforall.org, you can sign up and find out what's going on in your community.
That's athenaforall.org. We'll post a link to that from our website as well later today. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
My guest has been Shahryar Kousji, Executive Director of the Warehouse Worker Resource Center, and we've been talking about Amazon. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.